store go do our presentation. With that, we're so turned.
Mr. Chairman, council members, this is a presentation that I prepared for the Osage Summit next week. And Susan asked me to bring it, and it's a bit long, so I'm going to skip through the early part. And go to that's next slide there. Okay. We, Hydration Engineering in 2016, did a study to determine how much of Osage surface is used by oil and gas. And the first part of this describes how we went about that and how we got to such a high confidence level that we know how much surface is used by oil and gas. In 1978, for the 79 EA, they made a horseback estimate of 16,273 acres. And they made a forecast for 2000 of 23,000 acres. In the 2015 draft EIS, they said it was 803,500 acres. Now, like a lot of things in that draft EIS, it really doesn't deserve discussion. But our estimate in 2016 of a land actually used for oil and gas in Osage County is 12,000 acres. And in the paper, we talk about how we came to this conclusion, how we flew Osage County at 500 feet and took selected 407 quarter section out of the 9,000 some quarter sections. And measured the impact of oil and gas. Show them the road one. Yeah, there you go. We also measured the distance, the length of all roads associated with oil and gas, and use an average width to come up with the area. This is what an oil well looks like from Google Earth, and the one on the left is the same actual oil well, which is the Shannon number 8 in section 1322 North A East. Okay, here we go. This is, I'll start to read my paper now. This is an example. In 2014, Larry Chen, lessee and surface owner, completed another successful well in the Bartlesville sand on his property about 7 miles northwest of Bartlesville. My book says this is the northeast extension of the dry, hollow anticline, which has produced for over 100 years. Larry's 2014 well is the Chin number 7-8A near the suction line in the middle of the picture. The surface here on both sides of the suction line is owned by Larry. Larry's friend Rob Martin has production on the Notley lease, which is on the left side of the section line. Still, Larry owns the surface. Rob watched the 7A progress with interest, and Rob and Larry's son, Alan, decided on the strength of the 7A experience to seek a permit to drill the Chin number 8A and the Notley number 21 east and west of the 7A. Rob and Alan decided to share the expense of an ABB presence-absence survey. And guess what? Andy Biddick found a beetle. That ended the new well adventure for Robin and Alan. The thought of purchasing beetle bank credits was abhorrent to them. However, it is not the wells that Rob and the Chen family plan to drill that's going to diminish ABB habitat. In fact, Mother Nature has been preparing for future beetle babies by reclaiming original oil and gas disturbance on the Notley and Chin leases. The next one there. Okay. This is an early pull rod band wheel engine on the Notley lease, surrounded by beetle habitat. It is, by the way, Larry Chin's property and located on Larry Chin's property, and it's preserved for sentimental reasons. You can see the, if you look carefully, you can see the engine back there of the shed. The real competitor for beetle habitat is shown here. It is, of course, a rural water district. In this case, the nonprofit Strike X Water Company. Rural water subsidized or otherwise assisted by USDA Rural Development enables rural homes, frequently estates, whose owners destroy beetle habitat by mowing for aesthetics and/or fire protection. Back up one there, Travis. The 75 red balloons are homes within 2 miles of what would have been the Notley 21 and the Chen number 8A. And that's US 60 at the bottom of the picture. Okay, next slide. These two homes eliminated 32 acres of beetle habitat. The beetle bank credits would have cost at least $500,000. So, how did the USDA avoid an Endangered Species Act Section 7 consultation with the Fish and Wildlife Service? We don't know the whole story. They started with categorical exclusion. In the USDA regulation 7 CFR 1970.53, CEs involving no or minimal disturbance without an environmental report, I quote, "The CEs in this section are for proposals for financial assistance that involve no or minimal alterations to the physical environment, typically occur on previously disturbed land." You're going too fast. Back up. There you go. USDA Rural Development considered only the pipe usually installed in a rural road right-of-way. They have avoided consideration of what the pipe enabled. First the pipe, then the meter, then the brush hog. Current rural water service areas are the colored areas on this NCOG map. USDA supported rural water enables beetle habitat destruction. The USDA, in past and present administrations, is an aggressive rural developer. Not for farm workers or ranch hands, but for lifestylers that work in town or did so before they retired to the Skidmore Ranch. This is the, lost myself. Okay, next, there you go. This is the first slide from a current USDA rural development presentation. Don't fear the NEPA, indeed. How did USDA Rural Development and Fish and Wildlife fail to recognize the beetle? It is, after all, covered in 7 CFR 1970.52, extraordinary circumstances, an adverse effect on the following environmental resources, federally listed or threatened or endangered species, critically habitat, federally proposed or candidate species. I have not attempted an estimate, but I believe that rural development enabled by USDA Rural Development is the largest destroyer of beetle habitat in those parts of Oklahoma, Kansas, Arkansas, and Nebraska which have beetle populations, perhaps larger than all of the other sources combined. I talked on the phone on November 29 to a responsible person at the USDA Rural Development Office in Stillwater. He seemed shocked that I would make a connection between a new water meter and the destruction of beetle habitat. Okay, let's go back to Rob Martin and the Chen family. If Andy had failed to find beetles, the Chen number 8 and the Notley 21 would have been permitted and drilled. We know now that the positive survey was an indication of beetles to come. Andy says that that part of Osage County was crawling with beetles at the end of the 2018 active season. Had the beetle survey been negative, the Oklahoma Fish and Wildlife Office presence-absence procedure would not have prevented the surface preparation for the Chen number 8 and the Notley 21 from using beetle habitat, and they might well have set up housekeeping this past summer. Suppose the Chen family and Rob Martin had mowed the new well pads and the short road extensions over the winter or before the active season started. Fish and Wildlife says 8 inches of grass is not beetle habitat, and kept the grass short until just before the active season started. At the start of the active season, some reasonable time could be allowed for the beetles to emerge and fly away. They will not hang around and set up housekeeping because the neighborhood has gone to pot since they retired for their winter nap. After the to-be-determined reasonable interval for the beetles to leave, the grass will be kept short until construction is completed. The harm to the beetles is much less than the current practice resulting from the Section 7 consultation between Fish and Wildlife and the Osage Agency. And by the way, that did not properly involve the Osage. Now, I don't deserve credit for this idea. It is but one of several practical measures which came out of Nebraska. This one described the Nebraska Department of Roads Bulletin, summer 2014. This bulletin said, tip, grass and vegetation should be kept as short as possible without causing erosion. In most areas, vegetation should be kept less than 8 inches tall. Residual vegetation after mowing a tall grass area should be removed using raking, windrowing, or baling. If vegetation is kept at 8 inches or less, residual vegetation from mowing does not need to be removed. FWS needs to adopt this practical procedure for protecting the beetle around Osage oil and gas wells and move on to the larger problem of rural estates and brush hogs. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman.
So just to kind of sum up, who would have thought that a neighboring region of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife came up with the alternative of mowing to in the wintertime when the beetle is buried under the ground and keeping that grass mowed so that, you know, our oil and gas industry can make plans ahead of time to drill in that area during, you know, after it's been mowed and warm weather comes, the beetle leaves, flies away, and then you have your survey, you know, cost nothing. You know, there are alternatives.
Well, you wouldn't, in this case, you would actually not do a survey.
Okay.
You would not do a survey because these beetles fly all around, okay? Doing the survey just means that for those 5 days, they were either here or they weren't here. So if you do the mowing procedure, it's in this Nebraska method, you don't do beetle surveys. Andy has other things he can do to make a living, I assure you.
Council.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Fred, the certain example that you showed, you had the producer was also the surface owner. We're friends with the neighboring surface owner.
Yeah.
In most of our cases, our producers are not going to be the surface owner. So it's not like the producer can just show up with a brush hog and mow a half acre or acre of land on somebody else's property.
Well, I agree. You wouldn't do so, that. And it's going to require that your relationship with the surface owner perhaps begin earlier. You still have that issue of agreeing with the surface owner about where the roads are going to be, and the superintendent goes to some length to avoid getting involved in that, you know. So this relationship with the surface owner is an essential part of the process. It is now, and it's more so with this method.
Now, the situation under ingress and egress could be handled at that point of this element that you're talking about, Councilman, if that relationship, because someone collected damages, and once they have done that, being a former Lee M. Chapman estate, that's the only thing that they can go back on. But that also works a double-edged sword. That also means they can go in and maintenance it. So with that, Council, do you have any other more questions? Councilwoman.
I would like to ask Mr. Storr to explain the impracticality of a conservation bank for Osage County as opposed to, it's more practical perhaps in other places, but it's very impractical here. Could you give us a quick snapshot of why it's impractical?
Well, you know, beetle bank credits cost at least $15,000 an acre. the people that own the Beetle Bank are not making $15,000 an acre. A large part of that is the investment that they made in the property and all of the measures that they agreed to in a very complicated procedure to protect those beetles in perpetuity. So I have never felt that it was a good idea for the Osage to get in the Beetle Bank business, okay? But that's a possibility, but you're gonna have to pass these costs on to the oil and gas operator. And maybe you can save 20%, but I would be surprised if you could save more than that.
And then you've obligated the property for how long?
Perpetuity.
Thank you.
In other words,
that's right? Longer than the promise that Thomas Jefferson made to you.
Grass grows, water flows, and the sky is blue. Councilman, do you have anything to add? Council. With that, I'd like to move on. I've been asked if I could adjust the agenda with your favor. I'd like to have former Chief Tillman speak to us over some effort, and then I'd like to have Mr. Pipestem come right afterwards. The executive is so well that we could probably make a public comment and just pass it, if that's okay with the council. But at this time, I'd like to turn the floor over to our former chief, Mr. Charles Tillman. Chief, you can do it from there, whatever makes you comfortable.
All right. Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
All right. I can't hear myself sometimes. Here it is. I think it's a wonderful thing to have an Osage Federal Council newsletter, because there's so many of us out there that don't even know what's going on. And you all work for us. You don't work for anybody but the newsletter. The trust responsibility that you have is probably the greatest thing you can be elected to as far as the Osage is concerned, the shareholder. But to have this, and I agree with Mr. Redding, all the voters of this newsletter, that it corresponds with everybody in the United States and plus a few Osages in Europe. And so they need to know what's going on, because this is not a clandestine type of operation. The thing what I come here for, though, is that in this publication, you put out a quarterly report, and this was in June 9th, 2017, right here. It went to everybody. I asked for these quarterly reports from 2014 to present. And I couldn't get it because they said that we had to talk to our attorney. Now, I don't know what that means. I understand what that means.
Yes, sir.
I don't know the reasoning for it, because it was in a public or presentation here in this quarterly report and the newsletter. So what I'm asking the council to do, it seems like you all, I heard this guy, because you can hear anything. But I heard that the council passed a resolution to keep this to yourselves. I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm here to say that I'd like to have these quarterly reports and draft a resolution to that, so it would be standing, perhaps standing. So that's my presentation.
Okay, thank you. Wait, we're not. What I'd like to say is we already have a resolution on file that is going to turn over this information. We have what we have in office. We'll have to pull the archival out of Mr. Swan's office, and I'm going to have to take a personal commitment to that to get into the office. We don't have the key. It was so inundated last week. I couldn't force his wife to come down here from Oklahoma City. He's in the rehab. But with that, the chief already has the resolution that stated we were going to turn this over, and then also we are going to put this on our website. I'll talk to Lacey about it. But at this time, do we have that file ready for the chief? Of the one, the archival that we have, like today?
I gave him the file that
we have.
Yeah.
Okay. Council, you don't have any problem. Once I get in there, I'll go ahead and hand it. And we actually have a envelope ready. Okay.
Okay.
Chief, we already have your resolution. I'll just get you the archival to 14. I don't have 14 in my hand yet, Chief, but I'll get in there and get it.
I'll give you a bolt cutter and you go in.
That's how you used to get our rigs in. I'm glad my former chief, I sat with him. No one stopped our rigs. We faced guns out there. We faced everything, and we went right on in. Thank you, Kaika. We'll take care of it. With that, I'd like to ask that Mr. Pipestem, would you entertain us for a minute, moving up the agenda, please?
Certainly, Chairman. Appreciate it. Just want to thank you for the opportunity to visit with you. So, Chairman, thank you for some time on the agenda. Wilson Pipestem, I'm Osage Vic Wright. I've also got with me some of my team at Pipestem Law, and I'd like for them to introduce themselves.
My name is Alice Pulkistock. Thank you for having us today.
She's from Fairfax, and you may know her mother, Lindy Ponga.
I'm Abby Bain, and I'm a member of the Chalk Nation. This is Jason Bode, Jordan Harmon. I'm one of the widows. My name is Jordan Harmon. I'm a fairly new attorney here at Pearson Law. I've been practicing for about a year. I'm a member of the Muskogee Creek.
Hi, I'm Brandon Tyler. Similar to Jordan, I've recently joined Pipestem Law. I'm a member of the Cherokee Tribe. Thank you for having us today.
So I don't, not here with me is Mary Catherine Nagel, my law partner. She wanted to be here. She's doing two presentations for the Indian Child Welfare Act today. And our above counsel is Brenda Twenty of Pipestem, my wife, who does not take direction from me very well when it comes to the practice of law. it's an honor to be here, and Wilson Pipestem, just some background as a legal matter. I've been practicing law since 1995. I went to Oklahoma State, Stanford Law School, went to Washington, D.C. for 18 years. I moved back here about 6 years ago. I lived west of Skyview. And our office is based in Tulsa. We also have an office in Washington, D.C. So we have, as you know, I serve as lead counsel on Osage Nation versus United States, cases that went on for 11 years. I was lead counsel for 8 of those years. I handled that entirely by myself through the motion to dismiss, which was an important decision. And then with Aiken Gump, served as co-counsel. We were able to get a good result. I think 99% of the Osage Head Right holders approved that. So since that time, I've been practicing law, moved my family back home. My mother got sick and precipitated our move back home. And so we now live here. And our law practice, I'm very proud of the team of attorneys I have with us. I'm not sure if it's entirely unique in this country, but every person in our firm is a private citizen. I'm very proud of the work we do. Now, a lot of things we do, I've got a lot of experience in Osage oil and gas, and it's a unique world of Osage law, 1906 Act, Osage Nation Constitution, the amendments of the 1906 Act, CFRs, dealing with all the different laws that impact what happens right here. I've had a lot of experience in that. Now, those have changed some, and there's now new CFRs have been proposed, but Osage Nation law, constitutional law is very familiar to me. I represent the ranch, Blue Stem Ranch, and so we deal with the same issues where you've got state and federal law, tribal law that sometimes are inconsistent, managing your way around that. But we are interested in doing work for this Minerals Council. And listening to some of the issues that I've heard discussed this morning, like on issues like the American Barrier Beetle, let me just give you some ideas about another way to handle that. So you've got litigation going on against the United States brought by different oil companies or other parties. That litigation's been going on, as I understand from the presentation, that's been settled. They're waiting on a decision from the Fish and Wildlife Service in April of 2019. Now, one way to handle it would be to also sue them. That would be expensive and maybe inefficient because there's already settlement. But another idea on, Abby, what's the name of the Pawnee, the Fish and Wildlife?
It's Aurelius Skipwith has been on the
meeting. Yeah, Aurelius Skipwith is the new the nominee to be the Fish and Wildlife Director. That's Donald Trump's appointing the Fish and Wildlife. So she has been appointed but not confirmed by the Senate. Another way to handle these things, and dealing with federal agencies, particularly the Department of Interior for many years now, that world over there is different in how you influence that. There's a lot of different ways to do that. Once you sue them, they shut down. I think I heard that represented today. Listen, you sued us, so we can't really talk to you anymore. That's sort of handled by the Justice Department. Since we are not a party to that lawsuit, we know there's a settlement. And again, I don't know the details, so I'm speaking just more strategically from a larger view, but some ideas about how to influence that. We try to influence the oversight hearing, the confirmation hearing of the Fish and Wildlife Director through our friends in the Senate, particularly James Lankford. Now we have to see who is on that committee, and we have to strategize on how to try to influence that before that person gets to Fish and Wildlife. Now the Senate, the way it works right now, is there's now two new senators that are going to be seated here soon, sworn in on January 3rd. So the Republicans are going to be able to move every single one of their appointees if all the senators in the Senate want to do it. But that is an opportunity to influence that Fish and Wildlife Director. And typically you would expect the Trump administration to be very much in support of oil and gas. So again, I don't know the details of what's going on with American Bearing Beagle, but you're very frustrated about it, but there's a lot of ways to try to get to a good decision on delisting of American Bearing Beagle. Maybe you also might, it sounds like it's a separate way to solve the problem through a categorical exclusion under NEPA. There's a lot of people obviously trying to do that and have accomplished that, which I understand your frustration when we talk about that. But to the extent that you're moving towards an April 2019 decision under the settlement, we could, as the Osage Minerals Council, or maybe join the Osage Nation, that's sort of a question I'm not sure the answer to,
We'll give you that answer, right, if you're retained by us.
Well, that's an idea of whatever you want to do, whatever makes sense. I'm not sure how those relations work these days, but it would seem to me going to Fish and Wildlife, advocating, you've got this office, you want the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the appointees, there's a new one, Tara Sweeney, who's super supportive of oil and gas, right? That's why she's there. She's from Alaska. She has been appointed because of her support for opening the hand war to drill, right?
Yep.
So try to get her support, which should be pretty easy, to be honest with you, to try to influence Fish and Wildlife on this specific issue. Go to the Secretary's office, go to John Tsuda, who's also in that office. Tsuda is very well known to this Minerals Council, I think even right now. He's very well known to the Osages. We should be able to have good relations and be heard very closely by those folks, try to get secretarial pressure down on Fish and Wildlife Service to get a positive decision on delisting. Try to get the Congress, particularly the Senate, Democrats are tougher on NEPA, right? They're tougher on delisting. In the Senate, we should have a lot of friends on to try to bring some influence and pressure on getting a positive decision. Now, that's the way I think about things. When I see litigation, and again, I'm a litigator. I've done that since I started practicing law in 1995. Sometimes that's the best solution or only solution, but it should be the last resort, I think, because it's expensive. But here, I think there's other ways to possibly get to a positive decision, where I agree with the gentleman who was speaking earlier. We have a different voice as an Indian tribe. We are inherently different than oil companies coming in. We've got a different voice and a different interest. And so we should have been particularly well listened to in this administration, I believe. Now, the Trump administration, we can agree or disagree on how good they've been on some tribal issues. But when it comes to oil drilling, we ought to be in pretty good shape. So again, there's a different ways to try to solve a problem. That would be a way to short circuit it. I've got to promise you that you're going to get a good decision. But that's kind of one way we approach solutions to this, kind of problems the Minerals Council has. The other thing I know that you've worked on, when we did this lawsuit against the United States, we settled for $380 million for past harm. And we agreed that there, with the government, everyone agreed that the Osages are not getting market rates for their oil. So that's why we agreed to redo the CFRs. How do we make sure the CFRs kind of fit? Because it used to be the highest voting price of a larger geographic region, and it's been limited now to only Osage County, Osage Reservation. So that has led to, in part, our lawsuit was about, why are the Osages getting underpaid for their oil? Why are we getting less money for our oil and gas when neighboring areas are getting more money for theirs? So that was the point of the intent when we settled the case, was to try to fix the rules so the tribes get so the Minerals Council and the head right holders get a fair return on their for our resource here. Now, I understand there's a lot of history with regard to the CFR process. I don't understand it all. I went to one of the meetings and everybody was mad, so that's all I know really about it. But I do think in that CFR creation process, to the extent you're trying to do other kinds of business, not directly related to just leasing out land, to the extent you're trying to do other things, be innovative here, that CFR is gonna be someplace where maybe you find some room to do that. Because the 1906 Act and its amendments, which I lived in for over a decade, it created a system that we, you know, Osages, we like that 1906 Act, those amendments. They have protected this mineral estate. And it created a trust machinery that's unique in all of this country, where there's a tribal ownership of the estate, and then individuals get the money. Osages, other Indians, and non-humans even.
Uh-huh. Right?
And there's different law related to how each one of those. But with regard to that system that's been in place, where money goes in, it's paid into an account. Everybody used to call it the C395 account. It's got a different name now. But the way it gets paid out, it makes it difficult to do other kinds of business, because all of your money comes in, it's federally managed, it's invested for the short term, it's paid out every quarter. So it's more difficult to collateralize if you're just in the Minerals Council. So getting to innovative ways to do business, if you're interested in that, would require, I think, some creativity there. And maybe the CFRs are a place where you can find some room to do that, but also relations with the Osage Nation. I know the Minerals Council has had a mixed history with the Osage Nation leadership, or Osage Nation Congress and chiefs, if we're just being candid. But getting to other ways to innovate and to get more money to head right holders, I believe, would work better if you decided that those relationships, we could find a way to make them work. Because the nation has inherent powers, the Minerals Council does not. While you have full authority, I believe, and protect your interest in managing minerals, there's some times where it's just not so clear that something is a surface interest and some is a minerals interest. So, anyway, kind of talking at you quite a bit. There's a whole lot to talk about. I can remember being in here as a kid, Chief Tone. I appreciate he's always good to meet. My dad was a lawyer here.
Right here.
And so it's always nice to be back in this place. I remember my dad used to drag me along, make me come sit down in here for hours on end. I had no idea what anybody was talking about. So a lot of time I spent as a kid in this room. And so I can remember a lot of relatives and people on in these paintings even going through and trying to figure out who they are, all that sort of thing. But anyway, this is the area law that's familiar to us. I can't tell you that there's been a lot of water under the bridge over the last few years, particularly with the CFRs, which are enormously important. I would encourage you, I think you all understand that is federal law. Some people talk about the regs like they're just regs. They are federal law once they're put in place. And so that governance over those laws that relate to Osage Minerals production are enormously important in your ability to get where you want to get as far as creating more income for the Councilman Redcorn was talking about, the individuals who rely on minerals income. And so I've understood that doing work for the nation, the Minerals Council, dealing with other parts of the government. We fashioned this trust agreement, created a trust team in the litigation. It wasn't easy. People in the different parts of Osage government can disagree sometimes, that's okay. But on this case, who directed our work, we were able to fashion an agreement where three members of the Minerals Council, the chief and the speaker, would direct our work, and that held up over quite a long time. So you can do it, it can be done, but it needs to be a lot of good faith and a lot of willingness to work together, and sometimes compromise, but those are political questions for you to work out. But anyway, that's kind of our presentation, and I'm sure we're willing to answer any questions you might have.
Councilman Rebar.
Well, thank you. I'm going to withdraw.
Thank you.
But I was going to ask Mr. Pipestem, I think, needs to be reserved for executive session.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Councilman Redcorn.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I appreciate Chairman Waller communicating how we feel about where we direct our attorneys and who's going to make those calls. One question I have is, we retain Fredericks, Tom Fredericks. One of his papers he gave us early on is, why is the United States calling Indian land public land? Well, I'd like to hear your comments on that. He had a really good conversation. All of a sudden, in my mind, we've got these people out here, and we even paid for this reservation. Aren't borrowed with our own money. That's why we're handled separate. Why are these U.S. people calling this land their land? And that's why Tom is standing right there, and that's the music I like to hear. I know people want to please Washington and please certain special interests, but when we talk native protection, we're protecting, as Chairman said, as best we can to keep this ownership under the Osage. Before the state of Oklahoma was, we were.
That's right.
Before the United States. And I like Chairman going out west and talking to those tribes out there and telling them that we protected the United States after the Louisiana Purchase. They came to us because they couldn't protect their own interests, so they asked the Osage to help them. So to me, this land has been fought, paid for, died for, and we even have a history in the 20s. So, well, can you help me understand why is this government starting to come to us and say, oh, wait a minute, but, you know, who? This is our land. This is our prop. We just had a gentleman show me they're building homes with rural water. That's an insult. That land out there were trying to hold on to it 100 years ago so our Osages could live out there. Well, they stacked they did things until we did our own general election and we voted to a lot. And then, but we kept the minerals intact, or we'd have been a full reservation. So to me, these are just continual attacks against our land, our homes. So if I may, Chairman, if you have any comments on how can we protect this land for Osages?
First of all, I love your question. I love your perspective on this. You know, as many of you know, we ended up here because of a man named Ladonke. He came and said, Marvel Gray was about this. Mm-hmm. About how this land, we have a spiritual connection to this land. I was always gone. And this was a place that was created that would be our last home. And so this land, and we purchased that land. Now, the nature of the legal status of that land right now is we have a trust asset. So the nature of a trust, I'm just lawyer talking here. This is a trust asset. There means there's a trustee, in this case it's the federal government. The tribe is the trust beneficiary, and then it's governed by the 1906 Act, the Common Law Trust. Cobell helped spell out what that trust law means. Our case created a lot of very good law, I believe, related to that trust relationship we have with the United States with regard to this mineral estate we're standing on. Now, protection of that, I think, to me, this is particularly well protected minerals. I mean, this has been in place for over a century. There's been efforts to get at it many times. This Minerals Council, our forefathers, they protected that. Now, did we have a hard time with regard to the surface? We did. Now that's led to a lot of loss of surface land. with regard to our reservation status, they had an oral argument here just a couple of days ago, U.S. Supreme Court. He filed an amicus brief on behalf of the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. It's the fifth one that we filed in the last 3 years in the U.S. Supreme Court related to the reservation status of the Muscogee Creek Nation. Now, I believe that this is going to be a very important decision, and it could directly impact the Osage Reservation. Now, we have weighed in on that. We've gotten some bad decisions, but I believe it's wrong to say that's over, we've lost. We sought a, we went to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, we lost. Went to the Supreme Court, they didn't take the case. There's a case versus Solomon B. Bartlett that's under consideration in the Supreme Court that talks about reservation status and how a reservation is open and disestablished. Basically, the rules governing how that happened. With the Osages, we're one of the few reservations that was allotted, and they set aside Great Horse, Tommy, Pahuska, a couple other small places, but they allotted every bit of the reservation to Osages other than that. Most other reservations, they allotted the lands and they opened up part of it for non-Indian settlement. That never happened with us. That never happened with us. Now, I'm telling you, the courts are a difficult time to be there. It's a difficult time for federal courts, particularly the Supreme Court. Now, maybe that'll change. Maybe our prayers will be heard and the Supreme Court will find something in this Murphy case from Muscogee Creek that changes or clarifies the law that applies to us. Because we have a better case for our, that our reservation's never been disestablished. I believe Muscogee Creek does.
Correct.
That opener clause that the courts have ruled on that says a reservation is disestablished, you look at that opener clause about how non-Indians were able to gain access, we never had that. But our courts work back from bad, you know, from a bad place related to criminal law. There's real issues there. That's what the state of Oklahoma is saying. The sky's going to fall if you rule for Oklahoma, if you rule in favor of the tribe here. And so, with regard to our reservation, I believe that that is an unfinished fight. I'm talking surface land. So, now what does that mean? Some non-Indians think, if those Indians win, they're going to come knocking on my door, take my home and my land and everything away. That's just nowhere near right. Right? Non-Indians should not be worried about that as far as I'm concerned. Their property rights. There will be some change related to criminal jurisdiction, regulatory things, but generally speaking, as it was pointed out in this court for the Supreme Court, the city, most of the city of Tacoma is within a reservation. So here, I think there's lots of opportunity for the Osage Nation and this Minerals Council working together to fight those fights. Now, surface lands, again, you've got reservation boundaries, you've got issues related to lands coming out of trust or restriction, or reacquisition of those things. Some of those things I really think are probably more nation issues, but with influence from this Minerals Council. So when it comes to specific parcels of land, Councilman, you mentioned one specifically, I'm not sure the details of that, but I can tell you how I think about it. And that, you know, this Minerals Council and the Tribal Council before you, they fought hard for centuries to try to, for decades, and literally a century, to preserve what we're standing on now, the lands. Now, we've had a hard time with that, though. To me, there's some misunderstanding because of this tribal ownership of this mineral state. It's all intact, every inch of it. That's amazing. There's nowhere else in America that's like that. So that preservation has occurred through acts of Congress, and for any change, now I'll be honest with you, too, if this Minerals Council decided we wanted to take away head rights from the Osage head rights, or reacquire this somehow, or somehow move this over to the nation, you don't have the authority to do it. This is governed by the 1906 Act, Acts of Congress. The only way that would ever change is if Congress changes. And I'm telling you, that's not happening anymore. So I think there's a lot of fear out there among some of your constituents about what could happen because they rely upon income from the mineral estate. And I understand that. I certainly understand. You know, I grew up in a home. My grandmother rose pipes, and she understood that. Now, but the laws related to this, I think that we can hit the ground running with you if you want to try to find ways to innovate around this trust machinery that's been in place for, you know, over a century, I would not recommend you mess with that. It's been in place for a long time, but you can certainly work around it, maybe. There's been a lot of talk over the years about trying to refine oil, sell oil and gas,
yeah, we're done.
All of that, but I'm so sure.
Requested, we'll take care of it on the 19th after you review certain elements.
I've already taken care of those elements.
Perfect. Sir, continue, and then I'd like to turn it over to my counsel.
Yeah, and I apologize, I mean to interrupt, but I do think there's, you're dealing with a complicated area of federal law with the 1906 Act that makes sure it's totally federalized. You know that. You enter into a lease. Your business partners drill, they get money, they send it to the OST, BIA, it's federalized. So that process is difficult to interfere with. The money that goes into that system is very, has very legal, legally specific status. Those are trust funds under law. Those are OSAGE trust funds under law. So it's difficult to even get other money in or out of that system. Now, I would recommend, there's people that I think fear that the Nation of Metals Council sometimes try to do that. You don't have the power to do that, the authority to do that. Now, working around that, though, if that's something you're interested in, a new business, then I'm not going to tell you that's easy. It's hard to collateralize when all your money is OSAGE trust funds. Comes in, goes out. So business is not easy, but innovation is possible. But you know, you have to create legal infrastructure to do that. You have to have partners willing to do it with you, particularly the Nation. Let's not pretend they're not there. And understand you've got this system of federal, tribal, state law, and sometimes they don't always agree. So you can either go to where the fights are, or you can try to work around and do this.
Thank you, Council.
Are you coming to me?
Yes, sir.
I make a motion that we authorize the chair to enter into a contract with Pipestem Law Firm to be our local counsel. I'll say that I did visit with Mr. Pipestem prior to his presentation, and I asked him to agree not to bill us over $300 an hour. And he agreed to that, and that is a fair cut in his, that's a severe cut into what he normally bills others, but he's one of us. So that's my motion, that we would enter into a contract for him to be our local counsel.
I'll second.
Second. I have it open for discussion. Councilman Foreman.
I am not in favor of this motion. I think we need to consider, we just don't hire one lawyer without considering multiple ones. Therefore, I'll be voting no.
Yes, ma'am. Councilman.
Thank you, Chair. You know, since I've been involved this time, I was on the first count, 2010-2014 council, the second year of council. The ABB was just coming into life at that time, and then I was off for the next 4 years. When I came back this time, it's even more complicated, than it ever was. And one thing that I think, I asked the Nation, I don't even say who I asked, but ask him, do we have a lobbyist in Washington, D.C.? Do we have a lobbyist in Washington, D.C.? And I said, no, we don't have one. I said, why not? They didn't have an answer for that. I think we need somebody there that can help us internally as well as externally. A law abiding like that. I'm not a lawyer, but somebody that has a lot of influence and knows people in Washington. D.C. Washington, D.C.
Yeah, good one.
So that's my comment.
Council.
Thank you, Chair. We had Ian Shouts one time. I was a little concerned that he would go talk to everybody else and then come to us last. So if this happens and Councilwoman Harlan motion passes, I'd like for you to communicate with the chair first and only, or if it's Ms. Harlan in that seat first and only, that we don't go to the Nation. Is that something you can do?
You know, the way, you know, what our, we focus on representation of Indian tribes, tribally owned enterprises, that sort of thing. What I would want to hear from you is, if I start just communicating with the chairman or you specifically, you're going to rightfully be upset at me. What I want to hear from you is something in writing, so I usually request, you tell me who I communicate with. Okay, you tell me so we don't get into that. So that's what I prefer to do. Now, it may be in some tribes, it's, okay, you communicate with all of us on these kinds of things by email, and then take specific direction from the chair or somebody else. But I prefer that rather than me pick and choose who I'm going to communicate with, I represent you as a body. And I know that you're the bosses, I'm just the lawyer. And so I need your direction on who I communicate with. And so I think that's how I prefer doing it.
Thank you.
Just one more comment.
Yes, sir.
Another sore spot there with Mr. Shavitz was when we came on that they had a lawsuit in the county board of something, or I can't even remember, it was local, you know. And I just, at least on my front end, I was really discouraged to see anything fought in county court that has to do with our greatest asset. So I don't want to see that again.
If I could just comment on that.
Please.
So if I recall right, and I may be wrong about this, that was related to wind farms. Because Osage County was putting, basically Enel came forward, I think it was Enel, and said, please pass these regulations for us.
That's correct.
Very easy for us to do whatever we want to do, and they just did it. Right. And so there was, it was hard to, because the wind energy issues are serious and minerals, as it turns out, because they decided to illegally use Osage minerals to build the foundation of these facilities. That was where we ended up, but I've been limited in understanding of that, and I hear what you're saying. These are not the best mark. Federal court has been where Indians usually land, right?
Yes.
That's what usually, now I can't tell you every time that we can avoid state court. I wish that was the case, but I definitely hear what you're saying.
Thank you, Chair.
Councilman Harding has the resolution on the floor. Motion.
I believe, Mr. Chairman, that the contract that we negotiate with the law firm can be very specific and address the issues that Mr. Redcorn is asking about. Those would be concerns, I think, of all of us at this point. And I know that Mr. Pipestem understands those things, and I'd be happy to work with the chair to come up with an agreeable contract that answers all of those concerns, and we could present that in executive at our next 19th. Meeting. As the second part of my comment is, I know Councilwoman Gray has a question, but I'm ready to call for the question.
I'll call for the question. I agree.
I yield. Call for the question.
I'd like to have a question.
Councilwoman Gray?
Yes.
Councilwoman Harlan?
Yes.
Councilman Redcorn?
Yes.
Councilman Redigal?
Yes.
Councilman Rebard?
Abstain.
Chairman Waller?
Yes.
Secretary Yates?
Yes.
Councilwoman Foreman?
No.
Motion passes.
Congratulations.
It's my honor. Thank you.
And everything's going to go through the chair. Everything that we need taken care of goes right back to here and goes to all of our council. Thank you, Councilman Harlan. With that, I just want to make one short announcement. This effort in which you're talking about, I sit in that chair where Councilman Gray's getting up, and this man sat where I'm sitting at as the chief of the Osages, and we filed that in April of 2000. Took us 17 years to get here, and I'm going to ask that he mentioned something that we're going to do immediately, and that's get to Washington. Take this gentleman in. We're going to knock some doors down like me, Lottie Pratt, and Mrs. West used to do, because we're going to win it. And with that, I'm going to ask the council, may I make a short comment over executive session, and we don't even have to have one?
Sure.
I'm going to stand up. Y'all be seated. United States Solicitor General sided with the Osage Minerals Council in our Supreme Court case. The paperwork's coming out. Now it's up to Enel to take care of their situation. They asked for us not to be there, tacked us over taking them to court, and now they're getting handed their true just reward. We're not going to back up on them at all. We never planned on it. And someone wrote me a text, and this is why I stood up. It's one of our elders. They said that we took on something, and I want to acknowledge my third counsel who voted for this, and you who's going to fight the rest of it here over the fourth. They said we could not beat these people. They said, we were told by every fight across the country, there's no way that you could take down that giant. So I did an interview for the New York Times. I told them, I'm Osage. I'll give you how you take a giant down, because we fear nothing. But with that, I want to acknowledge my chief, Tillman. I sat there, I made the motion to go after that. We settled, and now we're still developing something that's better for our people. And I want to compliment him on that. The only ones still alive are Councilman Esley, Councilman Tremblay, Councilwoman Wood, and myself. So it's a great honor. I remember when you was here, I was the youngest man sitting here. The other comment I have is we're looking at a grant fund update. We were received a letter from self-governance that they weren't going to give the grant to the OMC or the nation. So we have come back to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Department of Interior, and they're going to give us another option. And this is where I think I can talk to my colleague now, is that we are going to look at applying as a direct service tribe like we always have. We have the chief signature at the BIA. We have the complementary issues of the accounts under the emergency well plugging. The last comment is that we had a response to the chief's request from Christina Kikonis, United States Solicitor's Office, and she just basically wrote back to the chief's statutes, in which you just heard from. We need to look at what avenues we can go, and we can't fix it from here. At that, I'd like to waive the executive. I have no other comment. Is there anyone like to have it?
I think he made a motion that we waive the executive. I'll second that.
I have a motion on the floor that we waive the executive. By Councilman Redcorn, seconded by Councilwoman Harlan. Call for the question, please. Thank you all.
Councilwoman Harlan?
Yes.
Councilman Redcorn?
Yes.
Councilman Redigal?
Yes.
Councilman Rebhardt?
Yes.
Chairman Waller?
Yes.
Secretary Yates?
Yes.
Councilwoman Foreman?
Yes.
Councilwoman Gray?
Yes.
Thank you so much. Everything's going to be on the board booklet. Amy will take care of that. So all the documents, and let's get ready to use that. Everything's going to be there.
We have like three things.
Actually, if we could take a 5-minute break, it'd be very nice. We'll wrap it up. And Councilman Redcorn, I need you for a few minutes, and then you need to give your update.
On this grant, I can do that, and that's all we need to do.
Would you like to take care of that at this moment?
That's okay, or I can wait.
Stan, what do you think?
I know.
Okay. I know, brother.
Just real quick, we got the vehicles coming. We're working with Danielle Cass to get the vehicles moving, get the insurance. The budget's in place. We're going to use the old budget until further notice, because I'm thinking we'll have to modify it. So Bill Lynn is Fork and Well Committee is working, surveying wells and getting those to Mr. Lynn. He's doing a full analysis on those. I think everything we've called for in the grant, we got moving forward. December 3rd was the start date. And I think there's something else. Is there anything else?
Vehicles.
Vehicles, like covered vehicles. I think that's it. So all the, we're moving forward with the grant. The Candy Thomas has got the RFP out for our board consultant.
Yes, sir.
It's out there, and they're going to advertise that as soon as Tammy gets that moving forward. So anyway, that's it for that grant, unless there's any questions.
No, but I was at that committee when we did set out the timeline rollout, and I agree to it. Looks good. Thank you, sir. Need 5 minutes?
Yes.
Take 5-minute break. I'll come back to you.